tonight.
Thank you.
I'm just going to get grounded for a minute. Just breathe and look at you. And Robert and the committee tonight, you guys did an amazing job, the Village Group. Amazing. It's surprising that those of us that call ourselves alcoholics can show up. When we say, I'll be there, we do. One of my favorite sayings used to be, I'll try. And we all know what that one means, right? I'm not coming. I just want you to think I'm coming. So my name is Suzanne Hatzman, and my sobriety date is July 6, 1991, which means that was a hell of a 4th of July weekend. And I know there's a lot of you out there who got sober like January 2nd and those kind of things. So I always smile when I hear other people that are close to holidays because it's hard. It's really hard. I want to do two things, so if you'll bear with me, I want to set a timer because I need a timer. And I also... once Robert asked me to speak, and by the way, Robert, wherever you are, what an amazing job. Thank you for communicating effectively and letting me know when and where and how long and all that good stuff. So that was appreciated. Thank you. But I'm one of those weird people that likes to have the same books that I read every day, the same prayer that I read every day, and this month has been fantastic about the 12th step. And so as I was reading on December 8th, I'll share this with you because it struck me that day. It says, the length of time of our sobriety is not as important as its quality. A person who has been in AA for a number of years may not be as good mental condition as a person who has only been in a few months. Older members must realize that as long as we live, I am only one drink away from a drunk. August 28th was a day of daily reflections. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. The dark past is the key to life and happiness for others. Since I've been sober, I've been healed of many pains, deceiving my partner, Al mentioned that, my mother, deserting my best friend, spoiling my mother's hopes for my life. In each case, someone in the program told me of a similar problem, and I was able to share what happened to me. When my story was told, both of us got up with lighter hearts, and that has been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. It feels so weird, like having the limelight. And one day there was a reading about being in the limelight, and I said, that's it, I'm not supposed to be in the limelight. Robert, somebody else is gonna need to come up here. So kind of like what Al did, because it'll make me feel better, and it'll make me just be reminded that we are here for all one reason. Is there anybody else that got arrested for drunk driving in the room? Would you be honest and tell? Wow, okay, I'm in good company. Look at these Visalia tables, it's amazing. If you have talked on the phone with me or hugged me, or read a book with me, or worked a step with me, or went to a meeting with me, or went to coffee with me, would you mind just standing for a minute? You've read a book. Look at that. Look at that. Again, tonight I want to sing that song, "This Is How We Do It," because this is how I've done it. My first experience with alcohol, and thank you, by the way, you all have helped me in my recovery, and it's a wee thing. I cannot do this by myself. And congratulations, I think it was Alicia and Brent. I hope you find what I have found here. I have gotten an amazing life. I still have problems. I still have struggles. I still have character defects. But my life is so much better without alcohol. My first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was 26. And I was at a bar in Anaheim. I lived in Orange County at the time, and I went to that bar frequently. I remember leaving that night. My house was about 10, 15 minutes away, and I remember coming in and out of a blackout, like, when am I going to get home? Oh, shoot, I'm lost. Dang it, did I go in circles again? And I left the bar at closing, and at 3:30 in the morning, I came to, and I was behind the wheel, and the CHP was behind me, and I had been in and out of a blackout for 90 miles. I missed my house by 90 miles. And the really frightening part about that is, this is not unusual for me. This particular night, I just way overshot my mark. And I was arrested. I had a pretty little pink dress on that night, 26 years old. I started drinking at 21. I got sober at 31. So I had 10 years of alcoholism that stole my life, stole my kids' mother, stole my mom's daughter, stole my ability to be a sister or a good employee, 10 years. And you know what I thought after I got arrested that night? That CHP officer had nothing better to do than to pick on me. I gotta remember you over here. But the judge sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought you were all ridiculous. I thought you were all a cult. Don't even try and hold my hand. I don't know why you're praying. And if one more person says the G-O-D word, I am out the door. It was hard for me. And I didn't stay. I didn't stay sober. In fact, there were several times where I went to the school that they sent me to, and I drank before I went, and 5 more years of drinking. And before I get to the part where I got sober, because that's the most important part, but it's important for me to share where I was at. Two amazing parents. My dad passed away 5 years ago, and on Monday we called hospice to come take care of my mom. And our family has been together all week, and I just feel so... I was absolutely convinced, without a shadow of a doubt, that 6 months ago, this summer, when I was walking in... Was it Pismo, Rayanne? We were at the coast, And my phone rang, and it was Robert, and he asked me if I would come and speak. Little did I know that this would be like one of the hardest weeks of my life, you know, to lose our mom. Little did I know. God knew. God absolutely knew that this is what I needed tonight. I needed my AA family. I have 7 brothers and sisters. There's 4 boys and there's 4 girls. So my mother, in my book, is a saint. And all 8 of us battled drugs and alcohol addiction. And my parents did not. And we had an amazing upbringing. I mean, we went to private school. I never remember any chaos in our house whatsoever. You would think with 10 people living in a house that there would be chaos everywhere. Oh no. Every meal, every lunch was packed, every uniform was washed. I set the bar high for sure. But what happened, I was attending a all-girls college prep Catholic high school. I was 15 years old, and my brothers were quite an influence, as they usually are, and I started smoking pot with them, and one of my brothers had a friend, and that friend, his name was Scott, that friend said, "Well, Suzanne, you have a cute butt." And he was the one. That's all it took for me, you guys. And what ended up, I had never really had a boyfriend. I was 15. And I had been a very sheltered 15-year-old. And I didn't know very much about him, but I had started getting high. And I started lying to my parents. And then it became, I was lying to my parents about where I was staying, where I was spending the night. And not very long after that, right before my 16th birthday, Scott convinced me to run away from home with him. And again, I didn't know very much about him. But I went, I wrote my parents a letter, and I said, "I love him, we're supposed to be together." And Scott and I had an amazing plan. We went to the Greyhound bus station, and we looked to see where the next bus was. And it was going to Salt Lake City, Utah. And little by little, I discovered that Scott had all sorts of warrants out. You guys are probably like, "Well, duh." But I'm really naive. And I don't know. And we get to Salt Lake City, and here's my parents who are getting this little Dear Mom and Dad letter. Their 15 and a half year old daughter, and I'm gone. I'm gone with this crazy man. He persuaded me to change my name because he had a lot of warrants out for his arrest, and I did. And I lied about my age, of course. And I'll just try and summarize it real quick because you're getting the idea. It ain't pretty. But I want to tell you this part because of all of the defects of character that started happening to me then. The lying, the fear, the insecurities, the comparing, and I was with him for 5 years. We had two little boys. He was abusive, of course. We had no phone. We had no car. I had no money. And I was pretty much his hostage for 5 years. My parents didn't know where we were. And he ended up being on the top 10 most wanted in the state of Utah. He made a living by doing armed robberies, hurting people. He had a job, actually, for a while. He had a day job. He worked at a furniture store. And he was a good employee. Everybody loved him. They didn't call him Scott. They called him something else. But he ended up burglarizing one of the women's homes that he worked with. And he was really good friends with her son. Her name was Jackie. Jackie came home while he was burglarizing her house. And he killed Jackie. And I didn't know that for a while. But he killed his best friend's mother. And it's only by the grace of God that I am here alive today, because I knew how violent he was and how crazy he was. And long story short, my parents got me an attorney. I turned myself in. You know, they don't really want me. They want him. And for 3 years, God bless my dad, he went back and forth to Salt Lake City with me to try and unravel the mess. It was a mess. I even had my fictitious name on my boys' birth certificates. So when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had so much wreckage. I just wanted to put up my hand and say, you don't even know. It's not possible. I can't. And what ended up happening is I was able to get my record expunged. I don't even want to go into how I got involved in some of the stuff, but you get the picture, obviously. But on the 4th of July weekend of 1991, that had been 10 years of me living, never telling anybody what happened to me, never sharing anything. And I lived in fear. He had been a fugitive for a while. It took him a while to get caught up with him, but they finally did. And he was sentenced to life in prison, and he ended up dying in, Folsom in 2004. He got sick, and they wouldn't give him treatment because he was a lifer. And I'll be honest with you, I was relieved because I was still scared. I hadn't told anybody about what had happened. And that weekend, another normal, I think it was a Friday night that particular year. One of these days I'll have to look at my 1991 calendar. But one more time, I got up in the morning. I got to look outside. I don't know where my car is. I don't know who drove me home. I don't remember much from last night, but I'm sure I had a good time. And at this time, I had lived with my parents for 8 years, by the way, trying to recover from all of that wreckage. I had dropped out of school. I had not worked a good job except a hamburger joint when I lived with Scott and we were married. And so I got my GED. My parents took care of my kids. They were my kids' parents for 8 years. God bless them. And I finally moved out because I had a really good boyfriend now. And he was a heroin addict. I was not well yet. But when you don't have any tools, you don't have any tools. And if nothing changes, nothing changes. Anyway, that night I came home, passed out, came to. My boys are young, 6 and 7, 7 and 8 maybe. They're not there. I don't know where they are. I don't remember coming home. I know one of the mothers of their friends. I believe she was a nurse, and I strongly suspect she knew there was something wrong with me. And she had my boys, and I'm guessing she somehow found out that they were alone, and she came and got them. To this day, I don't know the story. Anyway, my youngest sister, who's 5 years younger than me, she lived at the time in Arizona, and she was sober. And she called and said, "I'm coming to visit you. Can I stay with you? And I have a really big favor. When I come there, I have to go to a meeting. And I don't know anybody in Cyprus. Will you go with me?" I said, "Of course. I love my baby sister, of course." And so we did. We went to a Tuesday night meeting at St. Irenaeus Church in Cyprus, down in Southern California. It was a book study, 12 and 12, book study. And when they asked if there was anybody new there, she just reached over and went like this to my arm. Yep, I'm here for my sister. And, you know, it didn't feel anything like 5 years prior when I went to Alcoholics Anonymous when the judge sent me. The room had a different vibe. That particular meeting had a smoke break in the middle of the meeting. When we went to the smoke break, people came up to me. One of the guys, Fisherman Bob, brought me an index card, and he said, "These are my favorite meetings. Try them out. You might like them." Somebody else offered me a cigarette. I smoked then. And I just had this feeling like, what nice people. These are really nice people, and it felt genuine to me. Anyway, they told me to come back. I thought that was strange. And what's even stranger is I did the next week. I was searching. I was desperate. I was broken. And I could not stop drinking. And when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. Where am I going to go? Who's going to watch my kids? What's going to happen? And what happened is that became my home group. There's no explanation for it, except I was ready. I was ready. I still really didn't believe I was an alcoholic. For crying out loud, I had a car, and I had a job, and I come from a really good family. It is not possible. Alcoholics live on the streets. They don't have a job. And usually it's men, is what I thought. And that's not true. Anyway, I went to that meeting for, I think it was 10 years. But it was 6 months of pain when I first went, because I did not want any of you to think that I didn't know everything. And I didn't want to ask anybody any questions. I didn't want to ask for any help. I liked what we were reading. And the really amazing thing was, I was not going to the bar after work. I couldn't believe it. These ladies hear this all the time, but when somebody would take a chip, especially in the very beginning, they would take a 30-day chip, and I thought, yeah, I can do days, but I cannot do nights or weekends. And that's the truth. But what I learned after doing things like going to coffee with someone, they were telling the truth, and I couldn't believe it. So I got a 30-day chip, and I had 30 days, nights, and weekends, and I just kept taking the chips. And what happened, because it was a book study, is they started talking about steps and things like that. And I couldn't participate anymore, because for a long time, those people in that meeting let me talk about him. They never said, shut the hell up, sit down, you don't know anything. And I've heard people in AA say that was their experience. That was not my experience. It was the most kind and loving group of people. I needed that. I needed to talk about him, because at that time, I thought it was all his fault. And by God, I want your validation. They never, ever told me to shut the hell up, and I will be forever grateful. So I had a hard time sharing anymore, because I'm not working the steps. I don't have a sponsor. I'm going to meetings, and I'm getting chips, but I can't do anything more. Right? I can't. I got no recovery. I got physical sobriety, and that's it. And there was a woman in that meeting I admired so much. And I admired her because I had this glass wall up, and I never showed any emotion. None. And she would cry at meetings. Openly. And I couldn't believe it. I wanted what she had. That's what we say. Find a sponsor. Make sure they've worked the 12 steps, that they'll help you work yours. And that's what I did. I got brave and I got desperate. And I asked my friend Dawn to be my sponsor. And it changed my life's trajectory. I didn't know how to have friends. We were in Seal Beach one time, I think it was Seal Beach, and we were like, okay, we made a date. Now what do? We're meeting. Okay, we can have coffee. Yeah, we really didn't know. We can have coffee, and we can have a cinnamon roll or whatever we did. But I will be forever grateful to you, Dawn. You showed me the way. You had two sponsors at the time. It was a husband and a wife. And so she had the experience to show me. And that's how we do it here. We just are one alcoholic talking to another, sharing our experience. And this year, the last 2 years, really, isn't that funny? I retired 2 years ago. And my value has always been in my work. Like, that is how I feel important. And that's BS. That does not make me who I am. But I have struggled with that all my life. Because I came from Scott Reed's wife, what a mess, to having this amazing job. My sister helped get me a job at this company. Right at the beginning of the cell phone industry. And I'm telling you what, it became an amazing career. And so I got a lot of ego and pride now. And so I really need help with my 12 steps. So to be able to have someone to walk me through what they did, It has been an amazing recovery journey, and I ain't done yet. You can only imagine. But guess what, Ran? I did like have a couple of tears come, and then I was like, compose, because I still am trying to recover from that. It's not an easy thing for me. But guess what? This week, with some really difficult decisions to make, and I laid next to my mom in her bed one night this week, and I just put my arm around her, and I just said, everything's going to be okay. I wouldn't have been able to do that. I wouldn't have been able to do that before. I have Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for who the woman I'm becoming. I really do. And for all you beautiful young women, I have loved watching our Visalia Community Recovery. I have loved watching it. And I love us old timers too. But there's so many young people in Alcoholics Anonymous now. When I started 33 years ago, it was hard. You were all old. And now look, now I'm old, and I'm watching all these young, beautiful women come so broken, just like me, and we get to watch people recover. And there is nothing like it, absolutely nothing. Let's check the time. Oh, look, I'm doing good. That's just about my whole story, really. I have two sons. They're in their 40s now. You know, I wasn't their mom for the first 10 years of their life, and that was not easy to recover from. But I had tools and steps and good examples to help me through that recovery, and it's been a long one. For the first 2 years of my sobriety, I could not be with my family. I was so ashamed. I know I had embarrassed them so much. It put them through a lot with the whole Scott Reed five-year mess. It put them through a lot. But what I did is I made Alcoholics Anonymous my family for those first 2 years. I had service positions. My first year of sobriety, I was the chip chick at there's a club on Pacific Coast Highway down in Southern California, and it's in an old bar. That gave me great comfort. It felt like home. It was a candlelight meeting. I mean, all the vibe in there was fantastic. And so I was the chip chick. And this is my first sober Christmas. And I'm not going with my family. So guess whose company I got? Not good, right? Not good. Not good by ourselves. And I told myself, and I'm feeling very, very sorry for myself. I got nobody that loves me and all this nonsense. And I'm pretty convinced there's not going to be anybody there at that club. It's Christmas Eve. Everybody has somewhere to go. And I thought getting a bottle was a great idea. If nobody's there, that's it. And I heard the chips in the back seat. I'm like, ugh, I gotta go. I got the chips. So I'm starting to have a little bit of sense of responsibility. And I turn the corner, and you guys know, look at us celebrating Christmas. The parking lot is full with people. And I got my chips, and I brought them in there, and I did my chip commitment, and I didn't drink. And If you don't have a service commitment and you're fairly new in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, it saved my butt. Not only did it save my butt, it has provided me so much experience that I have not gotten anywhere in life. For example, in our Saturday morning meeting, there's a table where the secretary and the chip person sit, right? And what that has taught me is that is not being in charge or prestigious or better than anybody in the group. They got a damn service commitment, and that's a big deal. And when I first started Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought those people were in charge of everything. And that, luckily, I've stayed long enough to find out that's what we do. We have a service commitment. We rotate. It makes me feel part of the group. It gives me a sense of responsibility to show up. And to stay sober. Because, like, what I'm doing here tonight, the honest to God truth, is this is for my sobriety. I don't know if you care what I have to say. It doesn't matter. I need to be humble because it's easy for me to get cocky. My life is damn good today. And it's easy for me to get in this mindset that, man, life is happening. But this keeps me right-sized. And I had no other place that has given me these tools. We were talking on the way up, and I let them know back in that day when we had the job selling cell phone parts, it was primarily men that ran that company, and I got a pretty good job. But what they wanted from me was to give them a monthly update in the board meeting. And do you know what helped me speak to them with confidence and knowledge, preparation, was this. It helped me become okay with speaking like this. I could have never done that before, but it's given me living tools, ways to cope with life stuff, how to be a friend, how to listen. I did not know how to listen when I got here. In fact, I could only think about, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? And today, I get to hear everything everybody says because communication is like this art, talking and listening. So I am one of those no matter what people. I don't give my seat up in Alcoholics Anonymous for anybody or anything. It has saved my life. It has given me a life. It has given my mother the daughter to be there in her last days. And I am so forever grateful. It has shown me how to be a friend. It has shown me how to be completely rid of all of that wreckage. I got my record expunged. I am a free woman. And I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful. And I appreciate everybody looking this way. And I just feel honored to be here tonight and to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful, and thank you for listening. Done.
Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12stepTapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site. Contact us on www.12steptapes.com for more information.